Hello and welcome to Uniper's Market Insights. We are very happy that you tuned in again. My name is Florian Oberländer, and as usual, our expert is on my side, Gregor Pett. Hi, Gregor.
Hello, Florian.
Gregor, busy year so far. You have been pretty busy, and you also joined the eWorlds a couple of weeks back. Since it's one of the most important fairs, we wanted to talk about this. And Lisa Weising, trainee of ours, has a question for you. Let's take a look.
Hi, my name is Lisa Weising, and I'm a trainee at Uniper. Right now, I'm working in the Department for Corporate Communication and Governmental Relations. And my question for Gregor is, what were your key takeaways from this year's eWorld?
eWorld, as you said, is one of the most important events for the energy industry in Europe. So it covers gas and power and everything else. And I mean, in order to say what's going on, I would borrow a quote from the Canadian Prime Minister that he comment that he made in Davos, that it's value-based realism that's going on. I mean, the companies are dedicated to decarbonization targets, but still increasingly look at what the customers need, what the customers are prepared to pay for. So it's a very pragmatic approach that most of the companies take and have to take in the light of the state of the world.
Anything when it comes to technologies?
Yes, indeed. I mean, when it comes to information technologies, I would say a large part of the companies with a stand on eWorld are IT companies. In the meantime, offering services, and that is including but not limited to AI, for example. And in certain parts of the fair, you almost have the impression that half of the stands are from IT companies. So it's not always, but it's clearly a changing picture.
Yeah, very interesting to see that development there as well. And since it's always a big event for our events department as well, they gave me a few numbers, which I wanted to highlight here. So we had a total of 37,000 visitors at the eWorld, 2,500 stopped by at the Uniper stand. So
really?
Quite a lot. Half of it came to see you to ask you energy-related questions.
I doubt that.
We had 34,000 minutes of meetings at the Uniper stand, but the most impressive number are 4,000 cups of coffee that were passed out. So the beating heart of energy definitely beat a little bit faster in that case.
Typically, you can hardly speak at the in the evening because you have a sore throat then after all these meetings.
Yeah, it's very exhausting for everybody involved. 3 days of action for
and
sure.
And it's a very high noise level, obviously.
I remember our taping of Market Insights there last year as well. Very noisy. Let's move over to the press releases of the last weeks. Very interesting stuff that we communicated. If you want to take a look at our press releases in detail, make sure to stop by at uniper.energy. One of the contracts that we signed was with Enlighten. There we deliver certified renewable energy, and this is a data center, and we often talk about data centers here
indeed,
in
that
format. Why are data centers so important when we talk about electricity?
Yeah, data centers, there's two very important tendencies. One is that the sheer amount of electricity needed to do all the calculations involved, in particular in AI, drive the need for electricity, so they drive the demand. And then we also see that increasingly in Europe or in specific countries like Germany, where data centers are built there because countries these days, because of the geopolitical situation, increasingly want to have digital sovereignty, which means they want to have their data centers in the country where they can influence the regulation, the data protection standards, etc., etc. So both these trends drive the build out of data centers in Germany, in Europe in particular.
Interesting topic for sure. Another press release that we had goes back a little bit to the Chancellor's visit, German Chancellor's Merz in India.
Including our CEO, who was
there
as well. Yeah.
And we reported on that in the last episode as well. One outcome was an LNG deal over 10 years where we deliver LNG to the Gujarat State Petroleum Corporation. we always talk about security of supply here for Europe and LNG deliveries. How does it make sense that we deliver LNG to India then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a global market. So we have LNG volumes, for example, from our contracts with Woodside from Australia, so which are in the Pacific already. India is a major buyer of LNG, which means we, if we deliver to them, they don't buy this LNG from anybody else and so from other people. So these volumes are then available also to go to Europe, for example, from US sources, which are closer to Europe. So it's a global market. And if you add to that market, like we're doing with our supply contracts, then also selling is part of security of supply, globally speaking.
Yeah, okay. Understood. Another outcome of the visit in India was an offtake agreement with AM Green. Here we signed a contract over 500,000 tons per year of renewable ammonia. We reported on that already in the last episode. And of course, one of our biggest fans, my dad called me right afterwards and said, you know, what does Uniper or energy in general have to do with ammonia?
Good question.
I promised to ask you that. So what about ammonia? What does it have to do with it?
Yeah, ammonia can be used to many purposes. So for example, an ingredient for fertilizer production. That's so that's where you use it as feedstock. It can also be used in the in energy production. So it can be burned, for example, in motors and ships. Yeah, so that's one possibility. But also, for example, as a co-firing fuel in coal-fired power stations. So, for example, in Japan, it's used as a co-firing fuel. It's that particular use is less important in Europe, where in particular in Western Europe, most of the coal-fired plants are phased out over time as we speak. But in other parts of the world, it can be used to decarbonize part of the electricity production as well. So it's quite useful, and it's also easier to transport than an alternative, which is liquid hydrogen. So that's much more difficult to be transported on ships.
You mentioned Japan. Is it a global trend? Are countries investing in this?
Yes, absolutely. So for example, in India, they have a huge advantage because they have space for renewables installations like PV farms, and also they have the space, for example, to build hydro production, so to balance the fluctuating infeed from PV. And they also have favorably regulatory conditions. Then, and all this put together makes them a very attractive producer of renewable ammonia.
And in that case, on the contract case, that makes it a renewable ammonia as well.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Okay. And I mean, if you burn it, then I mean, ammonia is obviously nitrogen and hydrogen, so which means no CO2 emissions when you burn it. And it's very energy intensive when you take that from renewable sources and you extract the nitrogen from the air, that makes it basically a renewable fuel.
Okay, anyway, understood. If I understood correctly, you can even use some already existing infrastructure to transport, for example, in that case.
Yeah, there are ships that are fairly common you can use. It's not like a hydrogen ship, carrying ship that that is a very specific design that doesn't exist otherwise. Yeah, it's new and it's high technology. Ammonia is easier to transport.
Okay, yeah. Very interesting. And Mr. Oberlenna Senior, I hope the question was answered.
If not, come back and ask. Yeah, so we're doing the best.
Oh, he will. let's stay with renewables for a second here. And there was another press release that we published, and that was a PPA contract, which we signed with a cable manufacturer in KT in Wilhelmshaven over solar power. But let's take a step back, because I'm sure not everybody knows what PPAs are. Can you maybe explain a little bit what PPAs are?
Yeah, sure. PPA stands for Power Purchase Agreement, which it's fairly straightforward. You buy power from someone who produces it. But the specifics is that these products, these contracts, are tailor-made to the specific needs of power producers, in particular renewable power producers. And what they need is contracts. They are very often, they themselves, their core competence is most of the time to build and operate PV installations or wind turbines. And they sometimes like to offload the risks and the task of monetizing the output to someone else. And this is what a PPA is made for. There are various kinds of PPAs, like pay as produced, pay as forecasted, etc. So you can add, as a provider of a PPA, as a buyer of a PPA, you can add risk management services to that. And all of that makes this a very specific bespoke product for the producer of renewable, in particular renewable power. And this is why they are so common and why it's so important to have them, because it's a real enabler to build out renewable power production.
Okay. Understood. Yeah, I remember Matt Nunn was here last year to talk about green power in total a little bit more, and he explained this topic as well. And I met with one of the project managers, and she explained the deal a little bit more in detail. And what makes it one of a kind is that actually Uniper is building the renewable part itself in Wilhelmshaven and is delivering to the customer. And of course, that helps the customer decarbonize his or her portfolio as well. So that's a win-win situation for everybody.
And it's on the site of our coal plant that was there before, which we decommissioned. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And
great example for energy transition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to mention this here as well. We have a PPA configurator under Uniper.energy as well. So if you look for it there, you find all of the information. If you're interested of learning more about it, or if you're interested of building your own PPA, maybe, then reach out to us. You find all of the contacts online as well. All right. Moving over to one very important topic as well, which is on the agenda for this year. We talked about the power plant strategy in Germany in the last episode. And it was mentioned that there are two auctions planned for this year. We don't know too much about the logistics at this point, but of course we will keep you updated out there about the developments. Nicolas Pieper, a trainee with a placement in the UK, had the following question though.
Hi Florian, hi Gregor. My name is Nico and I'm working with Uniper as a trainee. I'm currently on my second placement at Radcliffe Power Station. And my question is, how do auctions for power work on the capacity market right here in the UK?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. I mean, the UK has many years of experience with capacity markets and capacity payments. The reason why they have so much experience with it is that they detected very early that there would be a capacity shortage and that they could come in a situation where they won't have enough capacity available. So they designed these capacity auctions. And what it means is that you determine a demand and then you tender that, and people can apply for this tendering scheme and they can offer to be available in peak hours. So they these auctions basically come in two shapes. One is 4 years ahead of the delivery and one is 1 year ahead of the delivery. They are designed then to, first of all, match the general demand and then to adjust as you come closer to delivery. And the design is made that you have to go through a pre-qualification process, which means, I mean, it's not that I can put some batteries in my garage and offer that to this auction. And then you enter the auction, and the auction is a descending clock auction, which means they start with a certain price, and then this price is lowered. And then all the people that are in this auction piece by piece drop out until you reach the demand that you really need. And then the auction stops. And that price that is the result, everybody gets that as a payment. So the people who are producing cheaper, they have more revenue, they have more to keep, and the others more at the margin, they earn less in this auction. The price you get is a capacity price, which means you are not paid for the kilowatt hour you produce, but rather for the kilowatt that you provide in the case of peak. So even if you don't even produce, you still get that money, and it's like an insurance premium. You get it if you are there, and you can deliver even if you don't actually deliver. So and this is what this auction is made for. UK has made, as I said, has had a lot of experience with that, And they also refined the auction design and the pre-qualification criteria as they went along from from year to year. And there was a certain learning curve. Yeah, and all the data is also pretty much available to the public and can be reviewed. So this makes it a really good example of how you can design such an auction.
And then do you expect the German auction to look different, or will there be a peek to the neighbor to see what?
Well, I'm pretty certain that this will be taken into account, and what the result will be, we will see. But I'm absolutely certain, given that it's so well documented and so well analyzed. Also, we always did a forecast for the UK auctions using public available data, trying to figure out who would bid into these auctions, and it's very, very well documented. And I'm very sure that the government has looked at all of these information.
Okay. And as soon as we receive more information, of course, we will discuss it here as well. Yeah. T-1 auction is in the UK, I think, this or next week. So if you're interested out there, you know, do some Googling and to find out more about the outcome there. Very interesting topic. And Niklas, I hope we answered your question. There's another question that we received with the topic biogas and covering the power supply during dark doldrums. We will discuss this, promised, in one of the next episodes. But for today, unfortunately, we ran out of time.
But yeah, because that's a good one, a complex one.
And absolutely.
It merits a little bit more time to discuss it.
Exactly. And for the next episode, you won't be on my side, unfortunately. You will be in Houston on the Sarah Week, a very important convention in the States. And to replace you for that episode, Jess Torpy from our weather team will come over. So we have a special episode just talking about weather.
Yeah, that will be a great one.
Absolutely. Sure. It's a very interesting topic. For this episode, thank you very much for all of your answers.
Thank you.
And to you out there, hope you tune in next time again. Until then, bye-bye.